Boys, let's begin. We're up to Perek Chaf Hey, the last pasuk Chaf Hey, the last pasuk Perek Chaf Dalet. I'm sorry, Perek Chaf Dalet pasuk Chaf Hey. Vimlo efo mi yachziveni v'yosem lekal milosi. Now, lekal over here means, it doesn't mean kel, it's lekal. La'al, I'm sorry, la'al, not lekal. La'al milosi will make my words into nothing. So this is the summary of the entire perek. Vimlo efo, if not so. Efo means if not, then. We'll loosely translate the word efo to mean then. If not, then. If I'm not right, then mi yachziveni, who will be able to prove me wrong? Kozov means a lie. Is there anyone in the audience that can stand up and prove to me that what I'm saying are a bunch of lies?
Contradict me.
Here, Eov, the one that's speaking, to review, the one that's speaking is Eov. Eov is just basically repeating the same theme that he's been saying all along, that there is no such thing as hashkocha pratis. Everything depends upon mazel. And the proof is, he described in this paragraph, what was unique to this paragraph, is he described the sins that are committed with sophistication. Not just your average petty thief. We're dealing with very sophisticated forms of corruption, and the wicked people succeed and they get away with it, and no one stands in their way, and they have wonderful lives. And if HaKadosh Baruch Hu really, if there really is something called Hashkocha Pratis, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should stand up to these people, should prevent them from being successful. And the truth is, the climax of the parak is really the second to last pasuk that we did. We spent a lot of time on last time, pasuk of Dal. It's a very, very deep idea, very profound concept, pasuk of Dalit, where he says, even if a Kadosh Baruch Hu, there'll be some excuse, there will be some reason why Rishon should succeed. Okay, you're right. Maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to reward the wicked people for the few small good deeds they did in their lifetime, in order that they should be denied Olam Haba. Even if that's true, that there is a need for wicked people to have reward in this world, but it's not logical that their good fortune should be continuously sustained throughout their entire life. That's too much. And it gives a mashal. It's a very powerful, this last pasuk really is a powerful idea. He gives a mashal, laws of physics. If you have a ball, you have an object on the ground, and the gravity demands, the law of gravity demands that an object remains flat on the ground. It's in contact with the earth. That's the way it is. If you decide you want to do something that's against nature, that's unusual, you want to elevate the object, you want to throw it up in the air, so go right ahead. No one's holding you back. Throw it up in the air. How long will this object remain suspended in the air? For a very short period of time. Naturally, what's going to happen? After 1 second, or after the momentum comes to an end, it's just going to fall back down to the earth. If you want to throw it up again, throw it up again. If you have a lot of power, you can throw it up very, very high. But eventually, what goes up comes down. That's the laws of that. These are the laws of physics. That's laws of nature. You can't deny the fact. So Eov here is something extremely profound. The rules of reward and punishment. Again, I can't emphasize enough how deep this idea appears to be. The laws of spirituality also follow rules. Their rules parallel the rules of physics. And if a rasha, a person who by nature is evil, who is a wicked person, the rules of spirituality, which are equivalent to rules of physics, demand that the rasha fall to a state of failure, that he succumb to failure, he suffer, and he be on the lowest status in this world. That's what's supposed to be. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu will decide, for whatever reason, that a wicked person temporarily deserves success to reward him for his sins. Okay, so Hashem will throw him up. He'll throw him up. But how long can he possibly last up there? Not more than a couple of seconds, or not for a short period of time. Just like if you take an object and you throw the object in midair, it will remain suspended for a short period of time. Eventually, it'll have to come. It'll have to come down, right. Unless you hold it up there.
In other words, unless Hashem, holds.
Right. So Eve is saying it's not logical that Kadosh Baruch Hu would take a rush and hold him forever. That's impossible. The best that Kadosh Baruch Hu will do, that's a given. The best that Kadosh Baruch Hu will take a rasha and throw him up temporarily, shoot him up in the air. Okay, good. He'll be up in the air. He'll be up success, wealth, power, honor for a short period of time. He'll come crashing down. Hashem said, okay, we have to reward you for another good deed you've done in your life. We'll throw you up again. Okay, he'll be up for a moment, but he'll come back down again. But it's impossible to throw something up in midair and for it to remain suspended in midair for a prolonged period of time. Yet, look at the wicked people. They go from cradle to the grave with pure success, honor, wealth, no diagnosis, no problems, everything is perfect. That's equivalent in this world to taking something and throwing it up, and it just remains suspended in the air for 50 years, for 70 years, for 120 years. It doesn't work like that. That's not the way the world works. And therefore he says, and the fact that wicked people defy the rules of nature, it can only be that there is no such thing as, there are no rules of spirituality. There are no rules of tzaddik and rasha, of schar v'onish, has to be, there are no rules of physics in the world in the spiritual world, and that's why he says everything depends upon nasla. And the Moshli gives this the flickering, I'll show you the pasuk again because it's a very fascinating pasuk. Pasuk of Dal, Romu Ma'at, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if you want, lift up the Rasha. Lift him up a little bit, just for a short period of time. But that's it. Ve'inenu, after he had his day in the sun, he's been lifted up. He doesn't exist. He falls back to the earth. V'humichu, and he is crushed. He is lowered, as being that his neshama is a low and wicked soul, and belongs. It naturally descends to the lowest place in this world. And then let's go further. And if HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you want to do this multiple times in the wicked person's life, okay, kakol yikavtsun, let him be no different than any other thing that jumps up and down. The word to jump, when you jump, you up for a moment, you come down. You may continue the cycle multiple times. People who skip along, they hop along on the road multiple times during their travels, they're up and down. But no one remains suspended up in the air for a prolonged period of time. And Ucharosh Shibolus Yimalu, these wicked people, they deserve, according to laws of nature, to become brittle and fall apart like the tip of a brittle stalk. And the fact that this does not happen is a clear indication that there's no such thing as schar v'oinish in this world. And now we come into the conclusion, v'imlo, eifo, and if what I'm saying is not so, someone come along here in the audience, me, yachziveni, who can contradict me, prove that I'm wrong, the same, and can transform la'al into nothingness, nilasi, my words of truth. Okay, so this is Eve's speech, his speech is responding to Eliphaz. And this is the third round. It's always good to take inventory. Where are we holding? We're holding now the third round of speeches. Eliphaz has spoken to Eve for the third time, and Eve is now responding to Eliphaz for the third time. And these are his parting words to Eliphaz. Not just Eliphaz, it appears in front of the entire audience. It's a town hall meeting taking place, and it's being televised throughout the entire world. And these are his words that have been recorded for all posterity. Now,
so what he's saying is that his hypothesis is, yes, that if things were fair, then this would be the result. But since it doesn't appear to be the result, then things aren't fair.
Well, he's saying there is no... If there was something called Hashkacha Pratis, Hashkacha Pratis would follow a set of rules.
That's the hypothesis.
That's the hypothesis, right. Hashkacha Pratis has to follow a set of rules. And the set of rules, he's saying something very deep, have to follow the pattern. The pattern, the rules are parallel to the laws of physics in this world. That's a very deep, it's like a Maral type of thing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the Teva. Hashem,
yeah. For every force there's a counterforce, for every action there's a reaction.
HaKadosh Baruch Hu put us in this world to look at the worlds of nature and to use these rules of nature and physics and apply them to the rules of spirituality. That's a very interesting idea. Who says that is so? Basically, the bottom line is it's not so. Because since everything Eve is saying is wrong, I mean, pretty much, it's not so. The rules of Ruchnius do not necessarily follow the rules of Gashmius. Eve is saying they must. And if they don't follow, then it means there are no rules whatsoever. We seemingly have a balance. There is a basic pattern to the rules, but there are exceptions. I think that's pretty much our hashkafa. There's a basic pattern. This basic pattern between the rules of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Teva, to the rules that HaKadosh Baruch Hu set for Ruchnius, but there are things that we don't understand and are beyond our understanding, but there is a parallel to some degree. Eve is saying it's all or nothing. If I don't understand, if I don't see it, I don't see the parallel, it means then there are no rules altogether. And if there are no rules altogether, I might as well do whatever I want in this world. I can deny HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hashkacha. Okay, seemingly that's what he seems to be saying, and he says to his feet, he concludes, he says, what I'm telling you must be the truth. Let's see, Pasuk Chaf Hey in what?
Does he have a right to challenge?
That's what he's doing. Eve is assuming that the entire Sefer works with the assumption that Eve says, if you created me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that means I have a right to understand. And if I don't understand, the problem is not with me, the problem is with the system. Abraham sacrificed his mind, and he said, I don't have a right to understand just because the Kadosh Baruch Hu created me and gave me intellect and presented things before me, it does not mean I am entitled to understand. Eve lives with a feeling of entitlement. I am entitled to understand why things happen. And it makes logical sense. If you gave me a mind, you gave me a degree of understanding, you put me in this world for a purpose, I'm entitled. And if I don't understand, it must be that the system is corrupt. Avraham says the system is not corrupt, the system is perfect, and that's part of the sign of being in this world, that you have to realize that you don't always understand.
Are you entitled to an explanation?
No, that's exactly the point. The understanding and explanation are exactly the same idea. If you explanation means you can explain, I will understand. They're synonymous, those two concepts.
No, but we had before, but I don't know if it was a leap, was that you told them who you think God owes you something.
Right, that's the debate. There are many arguments that were presented. Arguments are, first of all, there is a system, it's just that you're a sinner, you are the one who's corrupt. There are many different arguments that were presented by the friends. But here is his final words to, am I being clear? Right, let's take a look at the Mitzudos. Let's see how he sums up the entire parak. If you're going to tell me, my friends, Eliphaz, Bildad, and Sofar, v'imtaymru ein hadavar kein, if you're going to tell me that what I'm saying is wrong, everything I'm saying is wrong, ayei po ho'ish, who is the man in this audience that can prove to me that I'm wrong? Umihu zeh, who is this individual, asher yichazev osi, that can contradict me, can prove me that what I say is a lie? Loimar, to say, shaloi nimtzei smarbis, can tell me that the wicked people do not enjoy tranquility and success in their lifetimes, and v'yosim, and by doing so, if you'll prove to me that the wicked indeed suffer, and will therefore transform my words of complaint la'ayin into nothingness. Who here can prove me that wicked people suffer? They don't suffer. You'll find there are wicked people who suffer, but by and large he's trying to show that wicked people, generally speaking, do not suffer. They live out their life from beginning to end in peace and tranquility. And the man, according to Rashi, the main thrust was from the Dor HaMabel. the Dor HaMavel, even though Eliphaz, when he made his presentation, he focused on the Dor of Sodom, and the Dor of Sodom did not live out their lives. They did suffer. Their lives were short-lived. But Eov says that was the exception. Generally speaking, the world operates with the rules of the Dor HaMavel. The Dor HaMavel people live their entire life. Ucha Oimer, what is the summary of this pasuk? You can't deny what is public knowledge. In other words, Eliphaz, you got your facts wrong. Okay, we went through this already. You got the facts wrong. Go online. You know, today you can't get away with it. Dover that's destined to be revealed, the person cannot lie. Okay, now what's the summary of the entire parak? What is the summary of Eliel's response to Eliphaz? Ki yachish divrei Eliphaz. He denies, he contradicts the words of Eliphaz, lo mashenu emes ito. The MS is not with him. Ki ochas bedarchei hamokoim. He has taken hold, he has analyzed the way of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, uvemishpat osa, masha osa. And this is a summary of what Eliphaz says. Eliphaz says that he has studied the ways of God, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu has done everything with Mishpat. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a just God. He has punished and rewarded people for their deeds. Eliphaz says, you got your facts wrong. I completely deny what you're telling me. It's not so. Af Yisroim, Eov in this parak also has complained. Al ma yarech hamokoyim apo. Why is the Kadosh Baruch Hu is patient with the wicked? V'lo yoyvad es harasham ma'abdim nefoshoy sarbe. How could it be that a Kadosh Baruch Hu allows one, a few wicked people to dominate over millions, over many, and bring pain to so many people? Hayitochein. Does it really make sense? Sheyochos aleihem, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should have compassion upon a few wicked people, and at that expense of having compassion over a few wicked people, they're able to wipe out millions of people and bring untold suffering. V'loy al hanefoshos hanevdim, al yidei manat to show compassion to the souls that are destroyed through these wicked people. What? The victims. How can it be Kadosh Baruch Hu has rachmonis upon the wicked, lets them live, and by letting them live, they're able to carry out, implement their evil plans, and wipe out worlds, wipe out nations. Look at the Holocaust. V'hinei milvad ha-hatzlocha sheyesh l'rashom b'chayeyam, besides the fact that they have success in their lives, le'nifrida mehem b'moysam, then he goes on in this parak to describe that it's not enough that they have a good life. They have a good death also. When it comes time to die, they don't have to suffer the pain of death as the average person does. Ki yamusu b'kalos, they die swiftly, u'maher, mibli machoiv choyli, without any pain of suffering. For kol shekein hu ba'avur kein, shofat hamarocha, and therefore, it's absolutely clear because of all of these problems that he takes note of, it has to be kishofa. The only way we can conclude, the only thing we can make sense of how things operate in this world, is a very deep thinker, Eof. The only way we can make sense of all the corruption that goes on in this world is to say kishofa tamarocha be'es ha-heroyon ve-haleda, that there is something called a mazel. At least Eof does not go so far to say this thing that we mentioned many times, that there is an evil genius. Okay, at least he doesn't say that at this point. He doesn't say that at least at this point in time. That's a very powerful idea among philosophers, that there is a God, but God is evil, Rahman al-Islam. And God created the world, Bedafka, to bring reward to wicked people and to bring harm to tzaddikim, evil genius. Eov is not willing to go there. Eov, to his merit, despite all of his suffering, is saying that's total foolishness to say such a thing. And instead, the only logical solution is to say, Kadosh Baruch Hu created the world, it's like a clock, like a watch, he wound it up, and he departed and left everything depend upon the mazel, the constellation from which they were born. Therefore he complains, Madua lo yishadeid hamakoyim horas hamarocha. Why does the Kadosh Baruch Hu interfere with the system of the mazalos? Why doesn't he step in and disperse? Yishadeid means to disperse. He should disperse the haras, the shining of the mazel. When a man was born, he was born under a certain constellation. He had a destiny. But that destiny is not fair. It results in the suffering of innocent people. That therefore, Eev says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should step in and should change a person's mazel, should change nature, negate the mazel, in order to avoid suffering. If Hashem created the world, Haloi Hu Sidra, He's the one who put everything into order. If He is the one who put it into order, He can fix it. If you have an appliance that's broken, who do you send it back to? The manufacturer. If they're the ones who made it, they can fix it. If you're the one who made the system, if something goes wrong, you can fix it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So why don't you step in and solve the problem? So, rules. Here it doesn't mean to mean rule. Here it means shafa, means it's in charge. That's what it means in this case. You know, it's not to be taken literally. In this case, the Maracha, the constellations, they are calling the shots. They are the Shefe, the Shefte. They are the rulers. They are in charge of what happens in this world. And why does Mizrach Yishadeid means to interfere? He should interfere with Hoyros HaMaracha, with the operation. It means the shine, but here it means with the operation of the constellations. He has the ability to interfere and to change the settings because he is the one that has created them. Okay, now we begin Perek Chafei. It's a very short Perek, only six Perakim, probably the shortest Perek. And this is the last speech of the three friends. Let's just step back. We have over here three friends. Well, this is the second friend of the three. We have the Sefer begins with three friends coming to Eev to give him comfort. Eliphaz, Bildad, and Tzofer HaNamasi. There are three rounds of debate, and we're now in the third round. In the third round, the last of the three friends does not speak. Tzofer HaNamasi does not make an argument, a presentation in the third round. His parting words were in the second round. Now we're up to the second person in the third round. We already went through Eliphaz and Eve's response. Now we're up to Bildad. And Bildad, this will be Bildad's final response to Eiv. Eiv will have a long response to Bildad, and that's the end. That pretty much is the end of the debate between the three friends and Eiv. So you're going to ask me if that's the end, we're only at the Perek Chaf Hei. Where, what's going to be until we get to Perek Mem Aleph? Because there's going to be a new person who arrives on the scene. His name is, I forgot his name already, Elihu. Elihu. Elihu comes on the scene. It's not clear if Elihu was in the audience. He was, or was there all along. Came. He arrived late in the audience. Okay, we'll see when we discuss. He's going to have a one-on-one, an elaborate debate with, if he's going to go, I think, four or five times. Now, he's going to have an elaborate debate with Eiv, this fourth friend. But from the three primary friends, this is the end. This is the, now, because it's the end, it's significant. Anything that is the end is significant. So we have here the parting words. It's not just his own parting words. To a certain degree, it's the parting words of all of the three friends. And what's interesting is he's not very critical. Here, he changes his tone. He seems to be more comforting. Until now, they've been extremely critical of Eve. The friends have told Eve that you are the worst possible sinner. You've done the worst possible crimes. They accused him for things that are horrifying. Here he goes, Bildad goes very easy on Eve. And in fact, I was reading about Eisenman in the art school. He's a very elaborate parish. It's very hard. A lot of his ideas are very, very deep. They're over my head. But what he seems to be saying is that had Bildad started with this speech, maybe things would have been different. A lot in life has to do with timing, right? It's all about timing. Being in the right place at the right time. All of the arguments that the friends made, the fact that they are presented, they are preserved by Moshe Rabbeinu in Sefer Eiv, there's truth to it. But Eiv doesn't when it was said to Eiv, he doesn't accept it. He rejects through their words. Yeah, they were confrontational. That's what exactly he didn't. Too harsh confrontation. He did not accept it. So Rav Eisenman suggests if they weren't accepted, why is it recorded? So you'll simply answer because maybe Eve didn't understand it, but we could understand it. We have a different perspective. We're living later point in time. But he says something much deeper. He says Eve also would have accepted what they said had they been presented in a different order.
Or a different time. tone.
Different. Well, no, not even the tone. Even the tone would have been proper. But everything has a time and place. If Bildad, I don't know his source, for the, I didn't really absorb everything he said, but if Bildad would have, the first speech that would have been made to Eev would have been this speech of Perek Chof Hei, the ideas presented here would have softened Eev up. He would have been receptive to then what would have been said by Eliphaz and Bildad's other speech and so far. But it's because they were too quick to deliver the punchline before they gave him a soft introduction to the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what we would have to learn from Sefer Eiv would be, take everything that's said, just rearrange the Seder. If you rearrange the Seder, then it would take on an entirely different meaning. Can you imagine the night of Pesach, if you would reverse everything, you would start off with the Afikoman, and then you would do Morer and Korech, and then at the end you would have Magid. It wouldn't work. It would. Exactly, the Megillah, if you would rearrange it, right, obviously. So, even though technically, you have a chronological problem in the Megillah, but even if you were to take things that don't have, you can rearrange it, technically, you'll lose the flavor of what you're trying to accomplish if you don't do it in the proper Seder. That's why the night of Pesach is called Seder. It must be done with precision in this particular order. Even though technically, all you have to do are three mitzvahs. You have three mitzvahs, you have Dalet Kosos, and you have Vigata Levincha. We can juggle everything. Who says we have to do it in this order? Chazal figured out you're not going to have the problem. It's not going to leave you with an effect on your children, upon yourself, unless you do it in the right order. And an example of that is, seemingly, Harvey Eisman suggests what we're going to learn now is the Seder, which was not done in the right way. So, yeah.
You know, they say with confrontation, often one of the drawbacks is you make things personal. Whereas it's versus the issues. Now, they attacked him a lot on a personal level.
Not necessarily. We don't find them telling him. But we mean personal means between them and him, between Eev and
that takes away from the issue.
Yeah. There's jealousy and rivalry.
Yeah.
But doesn't, we don't find at least I'm not aware of that Eliphaz, Bildad and Sofar had anything personally. There wasn't anything personal against Eev. There was jealousy.
Talking about the Amana, the Ani, and the
maybe, okay, I don't know.
Well, the whole concept, you're a sinner, you did something bad,
yeah.
You are guilty, you. Yeah. And if you continuously blame and point to, that's what confrontation, harsh confrontation is, you make it beyond the issue, which is gentle confrontation.
Okay, that's really what Eisman is saying. It's not that the words were not correct. There was a truth to what they said, but it was said at the wrong time. It's a different idea. It's... They were right. There's a time to go tough, to be harsh. But you have to first soften up the person, put him in the proper frame of mind. I always found with Divrei Torah, you want to tell a person a Divrei Torah. 99% of telling a person a good Divrei Torah is they should be in the right frame of mind. If you go and you see someone on the train, on the bus, or you're at work and they're busy, I got a vart, you're not going to believe this vart. And you tell them the vart, you tell them a gem. It just goes. If they come, you come to shul, and there's a drasha. The rabbi gives a drasha, and there's a certain. The stage has been set, and they're ready to receive. Then even a simple, shallow vart can make a very powerful roshim on a person. Most of what you have to say depends on the person's ability to receive. And to receive, you have to set up. You know, there's an art in setting on the stage, the background. The person should be receptive to hear what you have to say. And that appears to be the major problem in Sefer Eiv. Eiv is not in the frame of mind to hear what the people have to say. They did not properly present a background, an environment where he would be receptive to listening to their harsh rebuke.
Okay, that's why I just said when you look, I mean, you probably did, but when you introduce, when six program from now, when he introduced Elihu, he obviously has been there the whole time and kept his silence because he thought, the way the wording is,
that they would make some inroads into his state of mind, into his thought process. But it says, Vayicharafu, when he saw that Eiv continued to claim that he's a tzaddik, he lost it. Vayicharafu, when he goes, flies into a rage, and he says, so he wasn't going to say anything. He figured they would accomplish their mission, but he saw they hadn't, so he obviously heard everything going on.
That's likely. That's the logical understanding of Elihu. He was definitely here all along. Like these debates, it seems like Rav Schwab writes, I don't remember the diuk, but it seems like that from the wording of the psukim, every so often you get an indication that these were not private discussions. These were discussions, debates that were done in the presence of a very large audience, and that could be, yeah, that's right. If he's
ain't
a daimer,
public
yeah.
Review,
okay.
Take him in a room privately.
There are always benefits. There are advantages and disadvantages to every type of situation. Okay, let's see over here. We have a famous pasuk. You probably learned this pasuk was learned in Daf Yomi recently, right? You got the Daf Yomi. What today's Daf? What's today's
Chav
Tes? So this is only a few days ago. Daf Chav Dal was the Daf. It's like the joke.
We got it back in 7.5 years. We got it back.
The joke. One of the famous Bat Chonim has a very, very famous joke with Daf Yomi. If someone asks you what's today's daf, so you say to him, you tell him yesterday's daf. Yesterday was Daf Chav Ches. Why can you say today is Daf Chav Tes? Because it's like Sira. You'll already be Yoitza. Today is Chav Tes. You're Yoitza. You don't have to do it. So yesterday was Chav Ches, so you still have, hope. All right. Vayan Bildad Hashuchi Vayomar. Hamshel Vofachad Imo Oiseh Shalom Bimoimav. Now, what does this pasuk mean? Let's first take a look at the Mitzudos. Mitzudos says, Hamshel Vofachad Imo. Goidel Hamemshala. Number one is the greatest of Hashem's authority. Okay, nothing more than authority. Next, umar besapachad. The second idea in the pasuk is fear, terror. Man is afraid of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Asher im Hashem, kol echad mehem. Each one of these two concepts, the authority of a Kodesh Baruch Hu and the fact that man fears a Kodesh Baruch Hu, oseh shalom b'maruchos hashamayim. Together, each one of these things makes peace in the constellation. Now, what does that mean? L'shelo yisnagdu ze lo ze bipu'ulas olam hashofel. In order that there should not be any conflict in the lowliness in this low world, let's say a few more words, ulabal yishanu es tafkidam, and that nothing in that the mazel should not deviate from its mission. In other words, the mazel, who is the one that is under the authority of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Who is the one that has fear of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Not man, the mazolos. According to what we're doing, according to the mitzvah, and there's only one of many interpretations, but according to the mitzvah we're doing over here is in the Bildad is coming to continue the discussion. He's not really presenting a new argument. He's continuing the discussion that there is something in this world called Hashkocha Pratis, and the Hashkocha is like a living organism which has Pachat from HaKadosh Baruch Hu and recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Moishel, is the ruler, has ultimate authority, and therefore Ratzo Loimar, here the Mitzudas clarifies what he means to say, Lo Kishe Toimar Ata, not like what you Eiv claim, She'ein Maruchos Hashemayim Nichnom Lamokon. He's very good when he's coming to define the problem. He's coming to define the problem. Eiv, you acknowledge there is a creator. And you acknowledge that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the mazolos. But your mistake is you think that the mazolos operate independently. They're so independent, they have no fear of the boss. It's one thing when you operate, you have a boss, and the boss gives you authority. You can do whatever you want. But you still, if I'm not going to perform well, I sense there'll be displeasure from the boss, even though I'm not accountable. I'm on my own. I have my own slate of business, but I have respect. He is the one that did give me the job. I don't want to let him down. There is a degree of respect you have for the one who put you in this position. That's natural. So Eve seems to be saying that that's not so. That the mazolos have been created by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they've been given authority, and they have no respect whatsoever for Hashem's authority, and have no fear of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So he's saying, that's your problem, Eve. It's not so. They're not humble for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Kihain, it's not so. The truth is, Kihain yikonu miponov, the mazolos are under the, they are not independent. They're under the authority of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In the Yiras HaRoimimus, in the Pachat HaOinesh, number one, they recognize He is the boss. Yiras HaRoimimus. And number two, they recognize that if they deviate from what they're supposed to do, the Marochos will be punished. As we will illustrate very shortly, he's going in this parak, where the moon was punished. The moon is one of the mazolos. When the moon complained, Ein, Shnei, Malachim, Meshamshim, Mekeserech, what happened to the moon? The moon was diminished. The moon was punished. What other example? When the sun shines. So it's fascinating, and he's going to present in a few psukim, is that when there are clouds, the sun takes this, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is upset with the sun. The sun has a tafkit to shine its rays, radiance upon the earth. And all of a sudden, the sun finds that it's intercepted, the rays of the sun are intercepted by the clouds. So the sun is insulted. The sun says, this is a rejection of my service. Very interesting idea. The rays can't reach their destination. Hashem is not happy with my service. So these are, let's say, even another example, the lunar eclipse. Whenever there's an eclipse, a solar eclipse, a lunar eclipse, this is interpreted by the sun and the moon that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not pleased with its performance. So what do you... Well, but they themselves, the cultures believe that, most cultures believe that Hashem is speaking to them. The fact is, an eclipse means that we're in trouble. But let's talk about the sun and the moon itself. The sun feels insulted that my service has been cut short. The moon also is instrumental in providing some degree of light to the earth. And when there's a lunar eclipse, the moon's light is cut off. So the moon feels that it's been rejected. So this is the interpretation. This is the interpretation of the mitzudos. Hamshel v'fachad imo. Imo means with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has authority. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the source of fear. And the understanding over here is oseh shalom bimromov. And therefore, in the heavens, in the constellations, in the mazolos, there is peace. What is the peace? The peace here means they do what they're supposed. They're under HaKadosh Baruch Hu's direction, under His directive, His guidance. And in other words, there is something called a hashkacha pratis. The mazolos are just the instrument of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but everything ultimately comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Let's see Rashi. Now, Rashi is very different. Rashi says, "Oseh shalom bimayimav." Oh, you know, I didn't finish up the Rashi. You know what? Let's go back. I apologize. Let's quickly go back. Okay, I don't even know really all these words, but let's go back to Pasuk Chafei. Vim lo eifo. In the preview, the last Pasuk of Pasuk Chafei, it says, Vim lo eifo kasher amarti, yavei echa mikem vi chaziveni. Same thing if what I'm saying is a lie, let someone come here and contradict me. V'yosem la'al milasi, shani mahar acharav ladas midaysav, shemar chaf l'sham. He's also summarizing what the entire parak is. I am questioning why HaKadosh Baruch Hu is patient with the wicked, v'yetzo havav kamoni hu miyaser, and tzaddikim like me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings upon suffering. V'eini mimison, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not bring me death. In other words, he comes complaining that why can't he made this complaint numerous times, if only HaKadosh Baruch Hu would end my life. If I would die, I would stop suffering. Why does he allow me to continue to exist and suffer? For example, we learned that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not cut me off before the darkness. He was begging HaKadosh Baruch Hu, enough of this torture, let me die, cut me off before the darkness, and I will be free. The elu shegvulos, yes, the elu. Shegvulos yasigu kol elo osu lo huku b'yisur. And these people who have b'masi gvul. It's amazing. From all the way he describes the wicked, the way he describes the wicked is the masi gvul. Isn't that a very interesting idea? There are many different ways you can describe a wicked person. Why do you say the essence of a wicked person is hasagas gevul? That was, in fact, that was the mitzvah that Kadosh Baruch Hu gave before Matan Torah. Hagbala, boundaries, don't pass the boundary. The elu, these wicked people, shegvulos yasigu, v'chol ele osu, and then they've done all these other horrible crimes, lo huku b'yisurin, they have not been afflicted with suffering, and that this summarizes the conclusion of it, of his complaint that it's not fair. Okay, now we go to the next parak. Mane bildad hamishol fachad imo klape shamar oyev. Here, according to Rashi pasuk beis, Bildad is using this as a response to a specific argument of Yoif. Klape shamar oyev erchol lefon of mishpat. Omar lo, hamshel v'fachad imo, hamshel ze michoel v'pachad ze gavriel, klum ato yochol l'hoshev es echad mehem. One of Eve's arguments is, if only I will have my day in court with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He kept on begging Hashem over and over, it's not fair, I want justice, I want to summons HaKadosh Baruch Hu to a din Torah, and there will be a judge. We've had it many times. So here, Bildad says, "Are you a, you're a fool? Do you know who Hashem's lawyers are? Do you know who his lawyers are? Michoel and Gavriel.
Lawyers, or is it a best in a panel of three?
I don't know. I'm not sure. But those two are going to either be come to the defense of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Klape Shomar Eov. To correspond to what Eov said, Erechol Lefon of Mishpat, if only I could arrange my case before Kodesh Baruch Hu in a court of law. Omar Lo, Bildad said, you're a fool for saying that. Hamshel Vafach Arimo, he has two lawyers. Lawyer number one, his name is Hamshel. And lawyer number two, his name is Pachat. Hamshel means authority, Pachat means terror. Hamshel, ze Michoel. This is the Malach Michoel. Upachat, ze Gavriel, the Malach Gavriel. Klum, ato yochol lohoshev es echad mehen. Do you think you're able to outsmart these two lawyers? It's coming down very hard. Now we gain from this fascinating insight. We know that Michoel, from many sources, the Malach of Rachamim.
The defender.
And the Malach of Gavriel is the Malach of Din, of harshness, Midas Hadin. So it fits very well. Pachad is terrorist fear. But Hamshel, what is Hamshel? Right, Mitzudas seem to say it's Yiras Horoimimus. Right? That is how the Mitzudos translated the word Hamshel. Hamshel means authority. And what about the authority? At the end of the Mitzudas he said that the Goydel Hamem Shal, the greatness of authority. At the end, he said, "Kimi Yiras Horoimimus." We look at the last words of the Mitzudos David. If we combine the Mitzudos David with Rashi, we gain fascinating new insight into the nature of Malach Gavriel. Imi Yiras Horoimimus, imi Pachat Hoinish. We mentioned many times that on Rosh Chodesh benching, we mispalul for two dosages of Yiras Shamayim. So what's the answer? So the simple answer is there's Yiras Horoinimus, or that's the higher level of Yiras Shamayim. Then there is a lower level of Yiras Shamayim, Yiras Ha'oinish, you don't want, you're afraid of punishment. Hamshel is Michoel, Yiras Horoinimus. That means it's a love. It's a fear that comes from love. Reverence. When you love someone so much, you're afraid that you should lose that relationship. So in an intense degree of love, there is fear. But it's a fear that is an outgrowth of love. That fits very nicely. That's Michol. Yiras Horoimimus. Hamshel. It's Hashem's world. It's authority. His dominion. And then there's Yiras Ho'inish. That's, I just don't want to get struck down with lightning. I don't want to get beaten. I don't want to get hurt. That fits in line with the Malach Gavriel. Okay, now we go to, so now what's the concluding words of the Pasuk? Esh Shalom Ramav. Hashem makes peace in his heavens. Kishamazolos oilim. Now this is fascinating inside Rashi. When the Mazolos ascend, are you learning this in Daf Yomi? When the Mazolos ascend, so each one doesn't know what came before them. Kishamazolos oilim. Kol echot soiver ani oiler rishon. Everyone thinks I am the first. They don't see what came before them. I'm not exactly clear in the astronomy how all this works, but that's let's read with that. Each mazel does not see what comes before it. They do not get jealous. You hear this about different gedolim. You always hear this in the gedolim books. The biographies, Talmidim, they come forward and they say, I always thought that I was my Rebbe's chosen Talmud. I was his favorite. I used to come into the office and he'd talk to me, he'd tell me secrets. I always felt I was special. And then years later I discovered every Talmud felt like that. So that's a tremendous talent. To make every Talmud or every child feel like you are the most precious. This is a midah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's what it says here in this pasuk. It's a pasuk in the pasuk. Oseh shalom. We say this in davening. I mean, 100 times. It's in Kaddish. Not bim. Oseh shalom bim ramav. Hu yaseh shalom aleinu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes shalom bim ramav. Rashi iuf. Here's one of the. I think it says not only place, but here's one of the places. What does it mean? Hashem makes every mazel, every object in Shemayim feel special. That is the role that we have on this world, is to imitate Heve Daimelo, imitate HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to make every one of our associates, children, Talmidim, special. And no one should be miskani one from the other. Kach Shamati. Very purport. What?
That is definitely a chazal.
Oseh Shalom Dimamav. Each one.
What I think they mean is that in the images that are in the constellation, that each one has its back toward the one that.
That's next. He's coming up next. That's the Gemara. That's the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah Daf Chafei.
Yes.
Is that the Levana did not see the beginning of the Shabbat. We'll come to that in a few moments. Okay, but this is one, let's do one idea at a time to appreciate each idea. The second idea he says is completely the opposite. The opposite is Lishnachrina Oseh Shalom Bimraimov. Eish Umayim. What is Shemayim? Shom Mayim. There is water and there is fire. HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings them together. Eish Umayim, Belulin, are mixed together. The Ein Mayim Mechavnes, so Eish and Mayim does not extinguish the fire. Kach Shamati, another interpretation. In heaven, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is able to accomplish the impossible. Oseh Shalom Bim Ramov. In Shemayim, Hashem makes peace. Hashem is able to bring together two opposites. On this world, that is impossible. So we have over here two different interpretations. Either HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes each one feel special. That is something that is applicable to us, because we can also do that in this world. The second interpretation is the recognition that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, his type of peace, is something that is beyond our ability. And by the way, there are two different words, Derech Agav, there are two different words. This is important when we talk about Shom Oseh Shalom Bim Ramav. In Parshas Pinchas, the Nasati Lo Brisi Shalom. And the Vav Shalom is a Vav Ketu, it's cut. Why is it a Vav cut? It seemingly alludes to this, the two interpretations of Rashi. Rashi is giving us here. There's a word shalom and a word shalem. What's the difference between shalom and shalem? Shalom is comparable to a pot. You have water. Let's talk about this example. You have water and you have fire. In this world, do water and fire go together? Impossible. You put water and fire together, you have an explosion. They don't go. The fire and the water do not mix. It bubbles. One will overcome the other. But let's say each one has an independent source. Let's say that you have a spring of water, and you have a fire that has an independent source, and they are mixing. It's not going to conflict. It's not going to go off well. How in this world is it possible to make peace between water and fire? You put the water in a pot, and you put the pot on an open flame. So now the open flame is very happy. You don't see the flame bubbling. You don't see the flame being extinguished. And the water is not disappearing. The water just gets hotter and hotter and it bubbles. It doesn't...
It is disappearing.
And it evaporates. Okay, it evaporates, but the fire is also being used up. There is peace. The peace is only through an intermediary, through the pot. The pot is what makes peace. The pot is the peacemaker between water, but the two alone cannot. Then there's a higher level called shalem. Shalem is when two things come together, let's say water and flour. Water and flour, they're not in conflict with one another. But when you mix water and flour, they blend together into a new compound. That's shalem. So the vav, so to speak, is like a pot. There is shalom in this world, and there is shalem. Sometimes you have two parties, man and wife, they don't get along. How do you make peace between man and wife? Divorce. Divorce is what makes peace. That article of divorce is the ultimate. But then there can be a higher level, is we can work out the difficulties. You can work out the difficulties, and then there is shalem. Shalei means when the two come together and there is unity, there is no conflict whatsoever. So Rashi here similarly says exactly these two ideas. Rashi over here says the first is Oser Shalom Bimromov. In Shemayim, the first parish Rashi says, and in Shemayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's conflict. There's jealousy. That's what it's, we know that. We know that, that in Shemayim there's jealous. There is jealousy. There are things we come across that. People, the competing forces in Shemayim, we find tzaddik when they come, and a tzaddik comes to the next world, when he sees the olam haba of his friend, he's filled with jealousy. Why couldn't I in my lifetime be like that tzaddik? There is such a thing in the next world of conflict. But Hashem in Shemai makes peace. Hashem does not cause one to suffer by seeing the greatness of something else. That's what it says when it comes to the constellation. Each one rises in its own time. One does not see the other. So there is shalom with a vav. But this Rashi's second interpretation tells us that in heaven there's also something called shalem, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is able to take two things which don't get along, Esh and Mayim, which represent the mashal of the ultimate things which go along, and yet bring peace between these two things. Okay, so we have here two different interpretations. Now, before we go further, we have, of course, the Gemara and Rosh Hashanah. And the Gemara and Rosh Hashanah says something similar, that it never happened, that the sun saw the pegima of the moon. Now, I'm not into astrology and astronomy and all these things, but supposedly the crescent of the moon is always at an angle away from the sun. The sun, that's the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the world, with where it's not possible for the sun to rise, and the sun will be shining into the crescent of the moon, because that would indicate the moon would feel embarrassed. The moon, the crescent of the moon is the punin of the moon, and for the moon to see the rays of the sun, it would be reminded, look, I lost my light. My sabereshus gesundheit, I complained and I said, Ein shneim lochem shamshim bekeser echad, I was diminished, and now I have to witness my suffering. I have to see how the sun shines, and I'm only to be able to be on the receiving end, a receptacle, and not be able to be a giver as well. That would cause the moon tsar. So therefore, Kadosh Baruch Hu fashioned the moon in such a way that when it wanes and waxes, its crescent is never opposite the rising of the sun. And the other example, I'm not really clear, this example is the rainbow. The rainbow is always
invertible.
It's not, because the inside of the bow would be the pegima. Now, why is that called the pegima? Not exactly sure.
That's because you're a
case. So the moon is, the sun is shooting the arrows. It's
if
not
it's the other way around. The sun will be shooting the arrows because it looks like that's the way a bow is.
So it looks like the bow is shooting the arrows. The sun is shooting the arrows. The sun is shining.
If the arc is like this,
yeah.
The earth.
When you hold the bow, how do you hold the bow?
Oh,
the other way, right. Oh, sorry. So therefore, it's the fact that it's the other way. So it's that the bow is not shooting at the sun.
That the sun is not able to shoot.
arrows because it's facing
the other way.
Okay.
The arrows are going opposite direction.
The arrow is going, so that is also some degree, I'm not clear, but that is also some degree of pegima, HaKadosh Baruch had pity upon the sun, okay, and whatever that means exactly. So these are the examples that are given in the Gemara. So let's do one more pasuk. Haloi pasuk gimel, hayesh mispar lig dudav, v'almi lo yakum oireyu. And Bildad says, Bildad has come to the, you have to look, the basic theme of Bildad in this parak is, he's not attacking at all Eiv. He's just saying, Eiv, look at the Bria. Look at the amazing Bria, how beautiful it is, how everything has a cheshbon. And that's it. I'm not going to make any application. I'm not going to attack you. Just look at it and think about it. I'm giving you something to think about. I'm not going to attack you personally like I've done in the past and like my friends Eliphaz and Sofar. I just want to show that there has to be hashkacha because the world is too complex to have come into existence on its own. Hayesh mispar legedudav. Is there a number to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's army? In Shemayim, Hashem has an army, has malachim. And the malachim, the number of malachim are infinite. V'almi lo yakum oireyu. Is there any object, any instrument in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's arm, any soldier upon whom HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not shine his, cast his light? And if that's so, certainly HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Kal V'chomer, the unspoken Kal V'chomer, is certainly HaKadosh Baruch Hu is involved in shining light upon human beings who are even greater than Malachim. Let's quickly look at the Mitzudos. Pasuk Gimel. Hayesh Mispar V'chayesh Mispar L'Gedudav. Who are the Gedudav? Who is the army, the troops, the battalions? Heim Malachim are the angels. Asher Yore Al Goydel Memshalto. The Malachim are an extension, they are an indication of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's greatness, ulze yiru yiras haroimimus, and therefore that's why the yiru, the constellations, are afraid of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the constellations, he seems to be saying the Mitzudas, is that they have a sense of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's malachim. We human beings, we live in Olam HaNister, we do not necessarily see the malachim. But the mazalos, he says, do see and sense the Gidudah. They do see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's malachim, and they do recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes care and sustains each one of the malachim. Therefore, the mazalos are certainly aware there is a boy, there is a creator, and they have to behave, they have to perform according to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's command. They have no control on their own. V'almi, al mi min tzva ma'arachas hashemayim lo yamid ar hashbaso. On what part of the constellation does HaKadosh Baruch Hu's influence not extend? Ulze yifchadu lebal. Therefore, the mazolos are terrified lebal yimone mokoyim hashbaso, not to deny the place of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's influence. There, in other words, everything the mazolos do is 100% controlled by HaKadosh Baruch Hu's authority and command. Rashi, Pasuk, there's no Rashi. Okay, so we'll leave it here with this. Okay.